is Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge, your hometown voice. And now your host, the Rogue announcer, Jeff Smith.
Welcome to Rogue Talk. I am Jeff Smith, and this is Rogue Talk for February 16th, 2018. And I am so happy to be back behind this microphone. It's took a week off last week, not by choice. In fact, those of you that listen to Chieftain Sports know that I missed the final game of the season, or the final two games, the girls and boys. Of course, that was also senior night, which I really look forward to. But I have been down with the flu, and it ran its course fairly quickly. At least I think it was fairly quick, and so I'm thankful for that. If any of you are home with this ailment, I feel for you. It hasn't been a lot of fun, but I'm back to work this week and actually feeling pretty good. Still struggling with a little bit of a cough here and there, although right now I feel pretty good. This morning on Once For All, I was struggling a little bit more, but feeling good right now. And I got a few things I want to get to. We've got a great show planned for you today, and an even better show planned for next week. For those of you that follow on Facebook, that follow Rogue Talk on Facebook, and for those of you that don't, why not? Come on, get on there and like the page and follow along with us. Most weeks I promote the show. I didn't promote anything this week, but the show that was supposed to be last week, and I'm gonna, for those that don't follow on Facebook, I'm gonna save it for the end of the show. But I mentioned in my last episode, when the ladies from the Miss Rogue River pageant were here, I mentioned that I had a big announcement about that show, that I couldn't make it then. And well, I'm glad that I didn't, because we had to postpone it due to the flu. But I got a great show to promote at the end of the day. We'll get to that. Some other things I wanted to say. I want to wish my daughter, Mackenzie, a very happy birthday today. Today is her 21st birthday. And in part of celebrating her 21st birthday, I have her beautiful 5-month and 1-day old daughter, my granddaughter Brooklyn, at my house right now. So it was hard for me to head down to the studio when that beautiful child is there at my house, but we're going to have her for the whole night so that my daughter can celebrate her 21st birthday. So I wanted to wish her a very happy birthday. And I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to my dad. He is in the hospital today having some things done to his liver, apparently. Sounds like an outpatient type thing, but it's always serious when you're having things removed. So hopefully all of that goes well. I know my brother's acting as his chauffeur, so he'll be looking out for him for us. But want to wish the best to my dad and get through these little procedures and get on with the crazy life we have in this family. So the best to my dad. Now, if anyone would like to call into the show today, I want to give you that number, 541-299-0498. 541-299-0498. And what we're going to be talking about today is not, of course, you know about the recent shooting, another school shooting, this one in Florida. And I don't really want to talk about the shooting. I don't really want to talk about gun control, although we'll kind of mention it. But I want to kind of look more at the 30,000 foot view, so to speak, of what are we doing in society to promote these things. You know, we have a lot of guns. In fact, at this point, I believe the statistic is there's more than one gun per person in the country, but so few of those guns are actually used in crimes. So there has to be some other underlying issues that lead to these tragic events, such as what happened earlier this week in Florida. You know, we had a lot of guns in this country, you know, in the 50s and the 60s, when these things weren't happening at quite the frequency that they are now. In fact, they were almost unheard of. We still had guns. We still had semi-automatic guns, which sometimes get called assault weapons. It's a stupid term, and we might talk about that a little bit more. But there's other things that are different, and I think those things are as important, if not more important, to the discussion of how we can slow down the occurrence of these events. I don't think we can stop them altogether, but we need to work as a society to, you know, change the way we approach things. And that can include guns, but I don't think it's just specifically guns. So we're going to talk about that, but we'll get to that in just a little bit. A couple other things I wanted to take a look at here. Of course, the last two episodes of Rogue Talk, I had the Rogue River FFA in here, and I also had the ladies from the Miss Rogue River Scholarship Pageant, and both organizations were promoting their big fundraisers for the year. The FFA had a very successful beef feed a couple of weeks back, and the Miss Rogue River Scholarship Pageant had their annual crab dinner, and by all accounts, it was a big success. I was not involved in that dinner this year. I had been in the past few years, but stepped aside from that this year. I do still plan on being the MC for the scholarship pageant itself. It's an event I love to be involved with, and of course, the FFA kids have been a frequent guest on Rogue Talk. We have a wonderful FFA program at Rogue River High School, and so I'm always happy to have them in here. But I just wanted to kind of give a shout out to the community for supporting those two events. You know, it was back-to-back weekends, and it's a lot to ask for people, especially those that participated in both of those events. But I wanted to give the community a big shout out. Both those fundraisers appeared to be successful, and it's because of the big hearts we have in this community, people that are willing to open their hearts and their wallets to support these young people. So let's take a look over at Chieftain Sports a little bit. Of course, we're now in that point where we're between seasons, although there is still some wrestling to be done, and we'll talk about that a little bit today. And then, of course, next week we'll have the results of the state tournament, which is going on this weekend. But the basketball teams finished their season. They had back-to-back games at home. And if you were listening Tuesday night, you probably were tipped off to the fact that I was going to be down with the flu. I struggled that night, and we don't have an actual cough button on our equipment, but we have a way to simulate that, and it was in full force on Tuesday night. And by the time I got home, I knew that I was going to be out for a while. And but unfortunately, the Chieftain teams this past week neither team could get their conference victory. They went all conference season without a victory. Some close games in there and some really good play. Couldn't quite get that done. But, you know, it looks promising for the Chieftain teams. There was a lot of things to be happy about with those teams. And not the least of which was in the Rogue River Press. It was reported this week that Coach King, the girls coach, will be returning next season. Now, I haven't confirmed that with the school. I know in the past, the coaching contracts have been a year to year, so I don't know that that's all official, but his plan is to come back, and that's good news. I don't know where things stand with Coach Chick on the boys' side. I'm pretty sure that he's wanting to come back as well. Haven't had a chance to talk to him either, but a little bit of good news for the program. I think the girls had a pretty successful season, at least leading up until the conference season, and a lot, again, a lot to build on. They were very competitive this year, and as were the boys. The offense struggled down the last month of the season, but again, a lot to build on there, a lot of positives coming from both of those teams. So we're really looking forward to that. And also related to the basketball, I did want to give a big thank you to Pastors Gigline and Wheeler. They filled in for me on Friday night, did a great job. And in fact, it was nice to hear two people on the broadcast. I try real hard to cover everything that needs to be covered, but having that extra help there made for a really good broadcast. So, you know, Evan and Rich did a nice job on Friday night, and I wanted to thank them for that. So that's all I've got for you on the sports and the news. So we will take a break here, and when we come back, let's talk how maybe we could approach these tragedies and actually make a difference to maybe stop some of these in the future. So we'll take a break here and be back with more Rogue Talk. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Vice President Mike Pence says the mass shooting at a Florida school is every parent's nightmare and says the nation is praying for the victims and their families. Mr. Pence is addressing the shooting at a Parkland, Florida high school during a stop in San Antonio, Texas. The vice president says the heartache in Broward County is unimaginable, but it's a heartache that many Texans know from the deadly shooting last year at a church in Sutherland Springs. President Trump says far-fetched theories about collusion in the 2016 election only served to further the agendas of bad actors like Russia. Mr. Trump is reacting to news that Special Counsel Robert Mueller has indicted 13 Russians and three Russian organizations for plotting to influence the 2016 campaign. Mr. Trump says it's time we stop the outlandish partisan attacks. On Wall Street, the Dow by 19 points, the NASDAQ dropped 17. This is SRN News.
Broadcasting to Rogue River, Gold Hill, Weimer, and beyond. 94.3, The Bridge.
With SRN Sports, I'm Michael Harrington. Just two games in the NBA yesterday. It was Denver getting the better Milwaukee, 134-123. This is Nuggets center Nikola Jokic.
We had a really good half. First half, we scored 13 threes, so the ball's going in. We share the ball and just... seems like I made a lot of passes.
Minnesota beat the Lakers 119-111. AP Top 25 college basketball, not a great outing yesterday for some of the top seeds. Fifth-ranked Cincinnati upset by Houston, 67-62. Number 6, Purdue, was surprised by Wisconsin, 57-53. Number 8, Ohio State, shocked by Penn State, 79-56. Number 9, Gonzaga, was victorious over Loyola Marymount, 76-46. Number 15, St. Mary's, California, upset by San Francisco, 70-63. This is SRN Sports. At the Winter Olympics, American Michaela Schifrin unable to become the first skier to successfully defend an Olympic gold in the slalom. Schifrin finished fourth as Sweden's Frida Hansdotter overtook first run leader Wendy Holdener of Switzerland to win the gold. Schifrin was coming off a victory in the giant slalom the previous day. In men's figure skating, defending champion Yuzuru Hanyu of Japan has won the men's short program with a games record 111.68 points. Adam Rippon was the top American as he finished seventh, 10 places ahead of two-time U.S. champion Nathan Chen. Ryan Donato scored two power play goals as the U.S. men's hockey team earned a 2-1 victory over Slovakia. In the NHL yesterday, it was the Sharks over the Canucks 4-1, Vegas 4, Oilers 1. Anaheim got the better Chicago by a 3-2 score, while Arizona beat the Canadiens 5-2, Washington 5, and Minnesota 2. This is SRN Sports.
Welcome back to Rogue Talk. And today, I want to talk about kind of the atmosphere or the attitudes within society. And let's take a look at maybe how some of the way we treat things maybe influencing things like these school shootings or more and more people that are turning to radical groups like ISIS or white supremacist groups. I don't think it's a big widespread thing. I mean, as tragic as these school shootings are, and they're horrific, even though they're on the increase, it's not a widespread thing that's at least not at this point, that's a plague. And people joining ISIS, while it's concerning, I don't think it's widespread across the country. We had the controversy of a white supremacist march and counter protesters and the president making some statements that were true statements, but maybe seen as a little insensitive and a little unbalanced. And so we've got these things going on, and they're not things that we've had to deal with in the past. And so I think as a society, we have to look at how we treat things and how we're raising our kids and how they're taught in school and those things and how all of that stuff kind of adds to the problem. So I kind of ask myself a question today. Is the attitude of inclusiveness part of the problem in our society today? Now, what do I mean by that? We focus on everyone's thoughts and everyone's feelings being equally important and equally should be given equal weight. Well, is that really the right way to approach things? Not that we should marginalize people and that their feelings shouldn't be taken into account, but I wonder, are we giving credibility to things that shouldn't be given credibility? I look at some of the things happening, even a couple of things we talked about this morning on Once for All. We can't have a daddy-daughter Valentine dance because somebody's being left out. We have schools with a you can't say no policy for girls at a dance. Now, while I understand the reasons for things like that, or at least the what they're trying to achieve, you know, we want all inclusiveness. We want to include everybody. Well, we can include everybody, but we don't have to include everybody in every single event. We don't need to include boys in girls' sports. It doesn't make sense. It's just not a path that we need to go down. We don't need to, you know, if you're not interested in, I don't know, let's say you're not interested in band, we don't need to force you to be a part of the band or include everybody in the band. We include the people that want to be there and that maybe have the talent to be there. We don't include everybody in a honors program. I was a decent student in school. I took all the academic courses. But at that point in time, when I was in high school, I had no desire to go to a four-year college. And there was a lot of reasons for that. But we had counselors at the time that their main focus was college, 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 college. You've got to go to college. And when the counselor that I was seeing my first year in high school found out that I had no interest in going to a four-year college, at least not directly out of high school, I never heard from him again. Now, I didn't say, oh, poor me, I'm being rejected by the counselor. He doesn't care about me. He may or may not have cared about me, and I may or may not have been being rejected, so to speak. But I was learning throughout my life how to deal with things that don't go your way, things that don't go right. So I go back to these two examples of these dances. We had a school that postponed their annual daddy-daughter dance because it wasn't all-inclusive. Well, why can't we have a different dance that is different for different things? The daddy-daughter experience is an important experience in the vast majority of people's lives. In fact, most of these daddy-daughter dances, if a girl doesn't have a dad for some reason, whatever reason, other men in the community of the school step up and escort these young ladies to these dances to give them that same experience. But we say, well, it leaves out transgender youth, or it leaves out gay youth, although I don't know how either one of those really apply. A daughter is a certain thing. A father is a certain thing. We don't pretend that those don't exist just because somebody doesn't fit into one of those categories. If we have a mother-son dance, and I guess they have those too, I don't get to go to that. I'm not a mother. I was a son. I'm still a son. But at this point, I'm the adult in the transaction, and I'm not a mother. I wouldn't go to it. But I don't feel I'm being left out. There's other opportunities for me to interact with my children in a school environment. We don't have to get rid of things because they're supposedly not all-inclusive. But let's look at the other situation where a school had a rule that the girls at the dance could not say no to the boys. Now, I believe they've done this for some years. They've had this policy. And on the surface, I understand what they may be trying to achieve with such a policy. I don't agree with it, and we'll get into that a little bit, but I think, obviously, in particular, this year seems a little inappropriate in the age of the hashtag Me Too movement, that telling your daughters or your female students that they're not allowed to say no to a boy that asks you to dance probably doesn't send the right message at this point. But having said that, I think that what they're trying to achieve is probably a noble cause. But again, is it ignoring the fact that there are valuable lessons that we learn from being told no? When it comes to dating and interacting with girls, you can look back at the times that a girl has said no to a boy. And in most cases, the hindsight is, you know, she probably did me a favor. We're not compatible at all. I thought she was pretty, and that's how we initially are attracted to other humans, is looks, because that's the first thing we notice. But of course, we as we go through relationships, we understand that not only are looks not the most important thing, in many cases they're not important at all. So the idea of wanting, I think the approach there is they're seeing certain instances where it's almost a bullying situation, where there's certain kids that become outcasts and they want them to have a positive experience at these dances. But I get it. I don't want anybody being bullied, and I think there's ways to deal with that But this this might not be the right approach. It sends the wrong message to the girls, and it may send the wrong message to the boys. Well, it definitely does in one respect, but in another respect, it does, because it gives them a false sense of confidence. And that kind of leads into what I'm talking about here. We have a whole generation of parents that were raised on everybody gets a trophy, everybody's important, everyone's opinion is valuable. And not that these ideas are bad ideas, but when misapplied, I think that we've given these people this false sense of importance and a false sense of value that doesn't always apply. You know, if you know nothing about basketball, your opinion of how to coach the Golden State Warriors is not valuable. But we've raised a generation, and this generation is now having kids. They're parents now. But this me generation of everybody gets a trophy, and it's starting to circle back, I think. I think that's a lot of what's going on here is, no, your feelings aren't always valid compared to someone else's. In fact, in certain cases, what you feel about something is really none of your business. You can have all those feelings you want, but I don't have to give them weight if you're not a part of the whatever the situation may be. Again, I'll go back to the sports analogy. You may think that you know everything there is to know about baseball, but if you haven't been in Major League Baseball, you haven't been a coach or a trainer or something of that, then your opinion of how the New York Yankees run their team is meaningless. It doesn't have any value. And so we've been telling kids that, you know, oh yes, what you think is valuable. Well, yes, it can be valuable, and we shouldn't exclude people, you know, regardless of their opinions. But we when you give false value to things, you're giving a false feeling of confidence and bravado, and when real life comes around, those feelings turn into failures. And if we haven't taught you how to fail, then you may be in a bad place. And maybe that's where some of these people, I hate to bring it back to the shooting, but people that are not fitting into society is because maybe it's because they've been told their whole life that they're valuable in places where they really aren't, and they have this false sense of value, a false sense of entitlement. And I think that's something that we really need to look at. You know, when I mentioned bullying, we've got a real problem with bullying, but I don't think it's the problem that you think it is. The problem that I see with bullying, we have all these anti-bullying campaigns. The schools here have one. Most schools have one now. They have these anti-bullying campaigns, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think awareness is a very important thing in any problem we face in society. But there's a couple of problems with these anti-bullying campaigns. Is they don't line up with what's actually happening on the ground. And what I mean by that, it's one thing to be aware of bullying, but it's another thing if we don't punish the bullies. Again, we tell them, you know, this is wrong, but your feelings are valid, and you know, we want to work with you. No, baloney. Your feelings aren't valid. Being a bully, no matter what your experience is, and you may have valid experiences that haven't been dealt with, and those should be dealt with, but the act of bullying removes all validation to your feelings because you're attacking another person for something that they didn't do. They don't deserve the treatment. But we don't go after the bullies. We coddle them, and we think we can, you know, that we can make things better. And I don't think we're making things better. And the other thing, the other aspect of this, and I don't see the anti-bullying campaigns lining up to this, we're teaching victims to be victims, and that's a terrible thing. We need to teach people how to deal with being a victim, but not by celebrating their victimhood almost. That's a ridiculous thing. You're going to face bullying and uncomfortable situations and uncomfortable people to be around your entire life. That's not going to go away. You're going to have bosses that are horrible people that treat their employees poorly. You're going to run into people on the street that are horrible people, people that drive like maniacs and then blame you when they cut you off and those kinds of things. And if we don't teach people to deal with those situations, they're not going to deal with them properly. And so, you know, that's something else that I think we need to look at. I think the awareness is very important. But what we're actually doing related to bullying needs to change. We need to teach people not to be victims, how to defend themselves, how to cope with situations, and we need to punish the bully. It doesn't mean we ignore what the bully may be going through and what may be the underlying problem with that bully, but you still have to punish the behavior. You can't allow the behavior to be pushed aside just because this person is going through some things. So, you know, those are a couple of things I think that definitely can lead to some of these problems we're having in society. We have obvious signs of antisocial behavior. We have obvious signs of severe mental illness that go completely ignored. And I mean, just this latest shooting, the signs for this young adult person that committed these heinous crimes, the signs were everywhere. In fact, some of the witnesses were saying, yeah, we knew that this guy was capable of this. We knew that if anyone was going to do something like this here, this guy was top of the list. The FBI had been notified on more than one occasion that this guy might be a problem. In fact, as recent as January, they were contacted. And he still fell through the cracks. Now, having said that, we have to decide as a society, what can we do about those people? You know, you can't just lock people up for saying things. We have a First Amendment, and people say a lot of stupid stuff. You can't just throw them in jail every time they say something stupid. Now, there are instances where you can lock people up for what they have said, but those are fairly rare instances. And even in those instances, I don't know that that's always the right answer in a free society. But what can we do? What are we comfortable with law enforcement doing? You know, I've heard a lot of people when they'll concede when one of these shootings happens, they concede that a big part of this, even though they initially come out gun control, gun control, gun control, when they step back and they look at things, they'll admit that mental illness is a big part of these things. I mean, you have to have some level of mental illness if you would take another person's life, and not to mention several other people's lives. So it has to be a huge part of this. And, you know, I remember back in the 80s, I was growing up in the 80s, and there was a big push that some of our mental hospitals, mental institutions were treating people badly. Maybe they were being misused as ways to, you know, hold people against their will and those kinds of things. And I don't dispute that those things probably were happening. But our solution to that problem was basically to close them down and to drastically change the rules of how we deal with the mentally ill. And it put many, many people out on the streets that probably shouldn't be on the streets, not just because they might be a danger to other people, but in a lot of cases, they're a danger to themselves. And I don't just mean, you know, the potential of suicide, although that's definitely a concern, but also just not being able to care for themselves well enough to survive the elements and survive on the streets. And, you know, so these shootings happen, we start talking about mental illness, and I hear a lot of people say, well, Reagan let all of the hospitals, he emptied the hospitals, and, well, that's partially true, because a lot of this did happen when Reagan was president, but let's not pretend that, one, we can just blame this on Reagan and that's going to fix something. We have to fix the problem, regardless of whose fault it was. And again, I don't put all of the fault on any one person, including President Reagan. It was a more liberal idea at the time. And again, I'm not trying to place blame. Oh, that's the liberals' fault, or it's the conservatives' fault. What I mean was, It was the liberals that had empathy for these people and felt that there was a better way, and that were pushing for a better way. And I give them credit for that. But unfortunately, just turning them loose into society has not turned out to be a better way. And so that's something we've got to deal with. You know, these things don't happen all on their own. And so the mental illness is something we need to deal with. And I would go back to what I was saying, like, you know, the FBI was well aware that this guy was a problem and they didn't really do anything. And again, we have to kind of have the discussion, well, what should they do? What are we comfortable with them doing? Obviously, what we're doing now is not enough. So we really need to look at, you know, potentially being more proactive with people that we know are, could be a problem. But we hear from the media and we hear from, you know, different individuals within government and the like, they'll say things like, if you see something, say something. But then when people say something, they were told we can't do anything until they do something, until they commit a crime. Or we're told, well, we can't profile. Well, yeah, you can. I'm here to tell you, one of the most important things that we do in police work is profiling. Not necessarily because of race, but not excluding race. When someone reports that they were mugged, they give a description. They might give the approximate height and weight. If they say the person was, let's just use this as an example, was a Latino person, and they gave the weight and the sex and the height, if they said he was 5'6" and weighed 160 pounds and he was Latino, we're not going to go looking for Swedish women to have committed the crime. We know who we're looking for. That's profiling. You're not profiling because he's a Latino. You're profiling because you know the suspect you're looking for was described as a Latino. That's profiling, and there's nothing wrong with that. And if we know there's a certain pattern within a community, that's something you have to look at. Is it unfortunate if it happens to single out a racial group or something to that effect? Yes, it's unfortunate, but it's, you can't ignore the reality. It's just not good, you know, it's not good police work. So that's something that we have to look at. We have to get away from this idea that we can't profile. Now, looking at the, you know, when something like this happens, of course, then the politics spills out and everything has to be about politics. I noticed on Facebook the last couple of days, there's been some really, I guess you'd call them positive stories coming out of this tragedy. What I would say about that is there's been a couple of instances of teachers that went over and above to protect their students, and they lost their lives protecting their students. And instead of celebrating these heroes for who they were, and it doesn't matter that they were teachers, if this shooting happened somewhere else, there's going to be responsible adults that step up to protect children. It doesn't have to be a school. It could be in any situation. There's going to be people that will step up and do the right thing. And we can celebrate them as heroes, but I'm reading these stories, and the person posting the stories are adding a narrative to the story where, you know, they want to ban guns now to protect our kids. And while I think that we need a more serious discussion about gun issues, you know, things like background checks, our system has a lot of holes in it. The different agencies that don't share information readily, that needs to be fixed. Law enforcement and government agencies need to work together to plug those holes so that people can't slip through the cracks and get guns that shouldn't own guns. But we don't talk about those things. We just talk about, you know, we need to ban this type of gun or that type of gun. We hear words like assault rifles and bump stocks and large magazines. And none of those things really matter if we don't deal with the underlying problems. But one of the things that bothers me is when we use these narratives along with these stories, we're robbing from those heroes. Those heroes saved lives and gave their own lives to save lives. And you're applying a narrative that they may not have agreed with, and they're not here to defend that narrative or to knock down that narrative. So we take it away from them. And one of the things I've been seeing over and over again is they like to point to Australia as their model of what we can do with gun control. The only problem is they don't seem to know much about Australia or the gun confiscation that's gone on in Australia. So let's take a look at a couple of things really quickly so I can tell you what I mean by they have no idea what they're comparing us to when they mention Australia. First of all, Australia is approximately just shy of 3 million square miles. The USA is a little bit bigger, about 3.8 million square miles, a little bit short of 3.8 million square miles. That's only about a 28% difference in landmass. The United States is about 28% larger landmass than Australia. So fairly similar there. But when you look at the population, it becomes very striking, the difference. Australia is just shy of 25 million, 20, actually quite a bit shy, 24.13 million people in Australia. There's 13 times more people in the United States. In a similar size landmass, we have 323 million people. That's about 1,300% more. You can't You're comparing apples and oranges when you're comparing the U.S. to Australia. It's just two completely different situations. But let's go back to their gun confiscation law and look at the actual facts coming out of that. Since that law was enacted in Australia, they've only been able to account for about one-third of the guns in Australia. So two-thirds of the guns that were owned in Australia are still not in the hands of the government. They have not been confiscated. So it really hasn't been all that successful just in sheer numbers. But the other statistic to look at, gun crime in the U.S. is decreasing at a faster rate than gun crime in Australia since the law was passed to confiscate guns in Australia. So it doesn't even seem to really be working in Australia. So again, I think there's serious discussions that we need to have related to guns, but comparing us to Australia or to Great Britain or any other country, it just doesn't work. First of all, we have a unique constitution that no other country has. We have freedoms in this country that no other country has. And until we approach every part of our law equally and not try and marginalize the Second Amendment because you might think that we need to do away with it. And you know, another part of this overarching attitude we have in society is this idea that my views don't matter if they don't line up with yours. Now, what do I mean by that? Again, back to this gun control argument, because I don't necessarily agree with the assertions of some of the people that want to ban more guns and want to go after assault weapons, it's immediately said that I have no compassion for the people that are killed in these shootings and that I don't care about people if I don't agree with your political opinion. And that's what it is. If you want to have a discussion about these things, we all care about those people that have died in these shootings. But to hold up your political opinion as proof that someone else doesn't care, that doesn't promote any kind of conversation. That doesn't promote any kind of solution. When I have a political argument with someone, I'm going to have facts on my side to back up my opinion. And that still doesn't mean my opinion is the right one. But I'm going to have something to back up what I'm saying. But when you marginalize the other side and say that if you don't hold the same political opinion that I do, that you are somehow less of a person or you're unfeeling or you're ignorant, that doesn't do anything to promote solutions or good conversation in society. And maybe that's another one of the attitudes that is hurting our country and causing so much division and maybe causing things like these shootings. So it's something to think about. I know you probably all don't agree with everything I said, but I hope you got something from it today. I'm going to have to take a quick break, and when we come back, more Rogue Talk. Don't go away.
You're listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. Facebook says it is doubling its security staff to 20,000 and actively working with the FBI to stop election interference by Russians and others. The company's statement is in response to the indictment of 13 Russians and 3 Russian organizations by federal prosecutors. The charges shed light on the extent to which Russians manipulated social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. He's known as Putin's chef, a wealthy Russian businessman and restaurateur who gained favor with Vladimir Putin through his stomach. On Friday, Yevgeny Prigozhin, along with 12 other Russians and 3 Russian organizations, were charged by the U.S. government as part of a vast and wide-ranging effort to sway political opinion during the 2016 U.S. presidential election. On Wall Street, the Dow by 19 points, the Nasdaq dropped 17, the S&P up by 1. More details at srnnews.com.
Keeping you informed, giving you the good news. You're listening to 94.3 The Bridge,
your hometown voice.
Oh, I wish there was a way to find out what events are going on in Rogue River.
There is.
There is?
Yeah, the website for 94.3 The Bridge.
They have Rogue River events on their website?
Yeah, for Gold Hill, Weimar, and Grants Pass, too. You can even submit your own event for everyone in town to see. And if it's on the website, they automatically talk about it on the radio, too.
That's awesome. What's the address to this site?
It's 943thebridge.com.
N-I-N.
No. Just type the numbers, 943thebridge.com.
Oh, 943thebridge.com. Hey, look, they have the latest local news on there, too.
They have everything on there. 943thebridge.com.
My savings are gone.
Okay, where were they last?
Here, right before I spent them on that vacation to Aruba.
Weird. Not weird. Not saving now means no money later. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
With an SRN News Business Brief, I'm Wally Hines. The Securities and Exchange Commission's rejected the sale of the Chicago Stock Exchange to a group led by China-based investors. The agency says there are unresolved questions about the ownership structure under such a deal and whether the SEC would have sufficient oversight of the exchange if it was sold. Amtrak's top executives considering suspending service on tracks that don't have sophisticated speed controls by a December 31st deadline. This is a push to strengthen safety after a series of deadly wrecks. Richard Anderson has told a House panel that Amtrak is worried passengers are being put at risk by delays in installing positive train control systems on tracks it uses but doesn't own. The EPA has drastically lowered a fine on agribusiness company Syngenta for violations of pesticide regulations. Under the settlement, Syngenta will pay $150,000 for improperly using pesticide at a cornfield in Hawaii. The original fine was $4.9 million. With business.
To Rogue Talk. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I've only got about a minute left. I went pretty long in that last segment, but I think it's important that we look at what we can do in society to improve these things. And again, there's definitely some discussion to be had related to guns, but that's not the only answer. And that's only, you know, in my opinion, a small part of what we really need to look at. And you know, we need to do some more immediate things to protect kids in schools, and banning guns is not, it's, I don't even know that it's a long-term solution, but it's definitely not a short-term solution. So anyhow, that's enough about that. Of course, in Chieftain sports, the only sports still going on right now, the wrestlers are in Portland right now. Their tournament is today and tomorrow. And we will get to the results of that tournament next week. Chieftains took a tough hit in the seeding for the tournament. None of the Chieftains were seeded, not even Gabe Ashidi, who was, you know, number two in the state for a good part of the year. In fact, he'll have to face a number four seed, and that's the best situation for the Chieftain wrestlers. The rest of them will have to face either a 3, a 2, or a 1 seed. So it's going to be a tough road for the Chieftain wrestlers, but we're going to hope that they can overcome some tough seeding and do well in the tournament. Tonight is the Community Center Dinner. That's at 5 o'clock, $7 for adults, $3.50 for kids 10 and under. Barbecued ribs tonight, and that is sponsored by Brian Dorsey for this month. And my big announcement, next week's show, we will have former host on KDRV Channel 12, Danielle Craig. She's now doing a podcast called Happiness in Progress. She will be my featured guest next week. And that's all I got for you today. So everybody be good to one another, because Rogue Talk is over.
You've been listening to Rogue Talk on 94.3 The Bridge.
Listen to Rogue Talk with Jeff Smith Fridays at 3 p.m. right here on Rogue River's Hometown Voice.
94.3 The Bridge.
Or on demand at 943thebridge.com. We'll be right back.